Chapter 13.
Herbert W. Armstrong, said Gringo. Bunny continued to look out the window of the car. They'd been parked up opposite 17 Crossan Road in the centre of the Clanavale estate since 7:30 a.m. On either side of the street were near identical rows of terraced council housing, which seemed to have been consciously designed with the least amount of imagination imaginable. Most were an eggshell white, save for the occasional stamp of individuality. Number 24 was painted pink. Bunny could only imagine the controversy that must have caused. Numbers 3 and 10 had kitchen appliances in their respective gardens. It was impossible to tell who had stolen the idea for this landscaping innovation from whom. Bunny looked at number 17 again, and tried to picture it as it had been on that fateful night. It had been well ablaze when he had kicked the door in, run through the flames, and rescued Tommy Carter and his sister Emer. All he had done was his job. What was he supposed to feel now? Pride? The reality was that he felt nothing. He had always been this way. His good deeds felt like they belonged to someone else. Only his mistakes were truly his. Donald Carter, being Donald Carter, had rebuilt the house exactly as it was. "Are you listening to me?" said Gringo.
"I shouldn't think so."
"Herbert W. Armstrong," he repeated. Bunny sighed.
"Is he the bloke who lives in number 32, with the rose bushes?"
"No. He's an American fella. Predicted the world was going to end in 1936.
"Did he?"
said Bunny, watching in his wing mirror, as the young woman from number 4 down the road pushed a pram out of her front door. The older sibling of the pram's occupant was running around excitedly, wrapped up in one of those padded anoraks with the hood up that made determining the gender of the child impossible. "And then he predicted it would end again in 1943, 1972, and 1975. Can you believe that?" The mother was now walking up the pavement towards them, her mobile phone out and glued to her ear. The kid was running ahead of her, like one of the less subtle inmates from The Great Escape.
"God loves a trier," said Bunny.
"Yeah, but after you've got it wrong three times, like, seriously wrong, who goes, 'Okay, folks, I know what I said before, but this time I really have nailed it'? Who has that level of self-confidence?" Bunny didn't respond. He was watching the kid. He was watching the mother, not watching the kid. And he was watching the coal lorry that had just swung around the corner. I mean, it's almost impressive, isn't it, when you think about it? Gringo was interrupted by Bunny's door opening and his partner stepping out. He bent down and put his hand out to prevent the kid from running any further.
"Whoa, easy there, tiger."
The face of a little boy displayed grumpy consternation from under the hood. He heard the whoosh of the lorry passing and a snatch of radio pumping out something energetic.
"What the fuck do you think you're doing?"
Bunny looked up to see the mother racing towards him.
"Get away from my child, you pedo!"
"Relax, love. I was just stopping him in case he ran out in front of the lorry there. I'm a guard."
"That's worse than a pedo."
She snatched the child's hand and pushed by Bunny, a waft of overly sweet, cloying perfume hitting him as she passed. Bunny sighed and got back into the car, closing the door behind him.
"Worse than pedos now, apparently."
"The end is nigh, amigo. The end is nigh."
"Honest to Christ, you have to get a license for a dog, but we'll let anyone have a kid."
"Funnily enough," said Gringo, "that's what I wrote in my last Mother's Day card." Bunny shifted in his seat.
"How's your ma getting on?"
Gringo looked out the window.
"Ah, good days and bad." I suppose that's to be expected, with the getting confused and all.
Well, yeah, but it's not like she was a fun gal before the Alzheimer's. I can tell when I go in to see her that the staff at the home hate her. She always spoke to everyone like they were staff. Imagine how she treats people who actually are staff.
I guess.
Gringo didn't speak much about his family, such as it was, and Bunny didn't like to ask. Until the age of 13, he'd been brought up on the posh side of the street, packed off to boarding school as soon as they'd take him. Mummy didn't like having him cluttering up the place. Diana Spain was quite the piece of work. The one time he'd met her, Bunny had seen how she must have been quite a looker in her day. But that was before the wind changed, and her face got locked into that permanently haughty scowl of disapproval. Daddy Spain, for his part, had been a successful financial advisor and accountant. Celebs, sportsmen, horse trainers, he'd managed the books for some of the biggest stars in the Irish firmament in the 1970s. Then, all of a sudden, the allegations of embezzlement had come. Daddy Spain had reassured the world that it was all a big misunderstanding before going into the garage and giving a hunting rifle the long kiss goodbye. Drunk, Gringo had once spilled forth the details to Bunny, who now knew more than he wanted to. Like the fact that, due to the length of the gun, Gringo's father had pulled the trigger with his big toe. Or that his only son had been back from boarding school for the Christmas holidays and ran in when he heard the shot. As Gringo told it, he didn't remember the blood or anything else, except for the incongruous sight of one highly polished shoe and one naked foot. Gringo's mother had insisted that her husband had been the victim of a tragic accident while cleaning a gun. Then there had been the quiet conversations. They'd moved out of the large Georgian village house to a damp two-bedroom flat off Parnell Square that her brother had reluctantly coughed up the rent for. She'd not been able to find what she deemed appropriate work, and so Mrs. Spain had stayed home, marinating in gin and bitterness towards all the friends who had betrayed her in her hour of need, as she saw it. Little Timothy was taken out of his fancy school, despite the Franciscans being willing to forego the fees if he became a day student. She did not need charity. Instead, he'd been sent to an inner-city Christian Brothers school which his uncle had assured him would be character-building. With his posh accent and ability to conjugate Latin verbs, it had not been a happy experience. It was here that Gringo had been born, with the adoption of the Spanish phrases and jovial demeanour to win people over. It was rebranding as a means of survival, and it had eventually become second nature. Gringo was one of the lads. Timothy was the one the lads picked on. That boy became the man who now spoke without any discernible accent and went out of his way to get on well with everybody. Oblivious to what was going on in her son's life, Diana Spain had wanted her only son to go into the law. He would then be able to sue everyone and get their money back. Signing up for the guards had been his ultimate fuck you to her. Not exactly the area of the law that she had envisioned. Still, when she'd developed the early onset dementia, he'd taken her in. It had cost him his marriage, or at least hastened its end. But he was her only child, and that had been that. Now he had her in an expensive home out in Malahide, and went to visit her every week. He gritted his teeth beneath that expansive smile as she told the nurses he was a barrister.
"How long have we been at this?"
asked Bunny.
"Just over 2 hours."
"And how long do we think it'll take?"
"Weeks, if not months."
"I'm bored out of my mind already. I wish something would happen."
Just then, Carter's front door opened and he appeared. Gringo looked across at Bunny in mock amazement.
If I was you, I'd use your next wish on a prettier face.
He grabbed the radio. Control Alpha 29 here. Primary has exited home property and is proceeding on foot. Commencing follow. Roger.
Not even a glance our way, said Gringo. Hurtful. I do so hate being ignored.
Bunny started up the car.
Let's see where Tommy Boy is off to this fine morning.
They drove behind him at walking pace. Tommy Carter never looked back, just waved at any onlookers, as if out for a relaxing stroll. He looked the part.
Neatly pressed slacks, a trim tweed jacket, and his seemingly ever-present glasses with the slightest orange tint to the lenses. His hair was tightly coiffed, his sideburns trimmed perfectly into a stylized point.
He looked more like the kind of bloke who'd run a trendy watering hole,
as opposed to a criminal organization.
And a pub was exactly where he was indeed heading. The Leaping Trout, to be exact, two streets away, the only licensed establishment on the Clanavale estate. Painted a tasteful peeling purple, the car park beside it glittered with shards of broken glass, and there were bars on the windows. Signs big enough to be seen from space assured anyone who cared that they had all the live football matches you could possibly want. To the left of the main door sat an incongruous patio table under a large umbrella. Tommy took a seat, and seconds later, a middle-aged man with a gut hanging over his belt appeared from inside, a small cup of coffee in one hand, and a couple of broadsheet newspapers in the other. Bunny parked the car opposite, and they watched him sip his coffee.
"Would you look at that," said Gringo. "How continental. The lord of the manor."
"He certainly doesn't seem fazed by our presence, does he?"
"He hasn't looked directly at us all this time."
"Maybe he hasn't noticed."
The tubby fella emerged again, a plate of pastries in his hand. He placed them on the table, and then bent down as Tommy spoke a few words to him. He glanced in the direction of the car, and then back to Tommy.
"Maybe he has."
The man nodded one more time, and started walking towards them.
"Jesus," said Bunny. "Do you think they offer a drive-through service?"
The man stopped beside Gringo's window, which he duly opened.
"Mr. Carter requests your company for breakfast."
"Oh, does he?" said Gringo. "How delightful."
The man pointed at Bunny.
"Just you, not him."
"Aww."
Bunny patted Gringo on the knee.
"Never mind. Sure you've got them sandwiches you made for yourself?"
Bunny got out and started walking across the road. Gringo's voice trailed behind him.
"If he's got any pan au chocolat, amigo, nab me one."
Tommy Carter looked up from his paper as Bunny stood over him. Despite having just requested his presence, he feigned mild shock at him being there.
"Ah, Officer McGarry, nice to see you. Please take a seat."
"It's Detective, actually."
"Is it?"
Bunny took the chair opposite.
"Nice to see you again too, Tommy. My, how you've grown. I remember when you were knee-high to a grasshopper. And now look at you. An armed robber and thieving scumbag."
Tommy placed his newspaper down neatly and plucked his tongue.
"I see you're as direct as ever. I can still remember you and my da getting drunk in our kitchen."
"And I remember pulling your bawling arse out of a burning building."
Tommy gave him an uncomfortably long look, and then shook his head.
"Ah, now, Bunny. Well done on getting your moment in the sun and all. But we both know you charged in when we were absolutely fine."
Bunny raised his eyebrows.
"Really?"
He looked at the man and remembered the frightened young boy, cowering under a dressing table with his baby sister wrapped in his arms. Hunted eyes, red from crying, frozen in a blank stare of absolute terror. He'd had to pry his little hand from the wood and drag him out, kicking and screaming.
"Absolutely," said Tommy. "I'd have got my sister out of there fine. I was just calming her down when you came blundering in."
Bunny laughed and noted the irritation on the other man's face.
"Fair enough. Believe what you want to believe."
Tommy turned over the paper and ran his hand across it, removing creases only visible to him.
"Your da seems to be having a rough time of it."
Tommy shrugged.
"Indeed he is. I heard you paid him a visit. Are you trying to drag him into this?"
It was Bunny's turn to shrug.
"Like you said, we're old friends. It's not his fault you turned out like you did."
"Yes," said Tommy. "I'm a self-made man."
"That's one way of putting it."
Tommy leaned back in his chair.
"Anyway, I wondered if we might lay out some rules of engagement."
Bunny raised his eyebrows.
"Such as?"
"My sister Emer has nothing to do with this. I'd like her left out of it."
"Are you in a position to be making demands, Tommy?"
Tommy paused for a moment and gave Bunny a long look.
"Consider it a friendly request."
"I wasn't aware we were friends."
"I'm more than prepared to put up with the harassment that D.I. O'Rourke has decided to visit upon me. It doesn't bother me at all. However, I've always taken a very dim view of anyone upsetting our Emer."
Bunny remembered the picture in their briefing notes of the boy who had both arms broken by an enraged 15-year-old Tommy Carter. Bunny leaned back in his chair.
"If she isn't involved, she isn't involved."
Tommy nodded, and then picked up a bagel and began slicing into it.
"If you could pass on my sentiments regarding my sister to your colleagues."
"Deliver your own threats. I'm not your messenger."
He gave another shrug.
"You know your presence is not welcome on this estate. The Gardaí are not required here."
"Is that so?"
"Civis Romanus sum. Do you know what that means, Officer McGarry?"
As it happened, he did, but he wasn't letting on.
"It's detective, and why don't you enlighten me?"
"I am a citizen of Rome. It was the phrase that guaranteed that any Roman could walk the earth in total safety, because everyone knew that if any harm should befall them, vengeance would be swift and terrible. It's the same here. The people know that they are protected, and not by the Gardaí. You boys only exist to protect the folks in the big houses down by the sea."
"I protect anyone who stays within the law."
Tommy gave a quick laugh.
"And has it occurred to you why you're following me around?"
"Oh, we had quite a detailed briefing on your extracurricular activities, Tommy boy."
"Yes. But why me?"
said Tommy, leaning forward suddenly.
"I mean, there's millions of pounds of drugs pouring into this city every month. Millions! With all that's going on, why are you so worried about me?"
"We're after the dealers too. It might take a while, but they'll get theirs."
Tommy laughed.
"Yeah. Like the ones who set my house on fire. Tell me, have you got them?"
"Well, apparently that fire wasn't much. A 10-year-old boy could have dealt with it."
Bunny noted the annoyance briefly flash across Tommy's face, the implacable facade temporarily slipping.
"A 10-year-old boy can't get his own justice. But a man can."
"Is that right?"
said Bunny.
Pray tell, how was he going to do that?
Tommy opened up the paper, signalling that their conversation had come to an end.
It was nice to see you.
Likewise, I'm sure. You know where I'll be if you fancy another chat.
I do.
Bunny stood and began to walk away.
Oh, and Mr. McGarry.
Bunny stared ahead to Gringo, who was watching them from the car.
Detective.
Bunny turned around.
Our history is nice and all, but just so as you know it. It only goes so far.
They locked eyes for a moment.
Likewise.
Tommy looked down at his paper again.
I'll see you around.
Oh, you can count on that.